Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Hello.
The recording is in progress.
Hold on.
All right, I'm holding.
He had to close the door to Fortress Classy.
Oh.
So my children don't bother me.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're actually recording this a little bit early than we normally do. So as we all know that by next week, when this podcast will actually come out, this podcast will come out the 9th. We're recording on the 1st. That something huge is going to happen, probably nuclear war. So I just want to point that out.
Well, I mean, to be fair, if nuclear war happens, then we probably won't be getting a chance to upload.
Nah, we still would be able to. Are you kidding me? The way that this dystopian present is unfurling in front of us, we're going to be able to go to work in the middle of nuclear war.
Actually, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Biden will be on TV going like, now we understand that there's a lot of, you know, deadly radioactive zones, but it's time for the American people to get back to the office.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you'll be seeing commercials on YouTube, because of course you'll still have the mutated versions of our favorite YouTubers.
Yes, of course.
Being like,
I'm Markiplier and welcome back to Five Nights at
Yeah. Here on our Mariah Elizabeth, we're going to be playing with my second head. So that's kind of what we're going to have to deal with. And then there's going to be like commercials on there that say, nuclear war has been hard on all of us, but I think it's time for all of us to get together and work through it. And the best way to do that is getting back and spending money.
Yes. Get back to the office. I love it. Yeah, so you're right.
I'm on the corporate board, and we've made our shareholders a lot of money during the nuclear war. And the fact is that I'm technically two shareholders in one because of my appendage, my small cloned appendage.
That's right.
Technically, since he's not me, he's allowed to, hold stock that I shouldn't be able to hold, because, you know, I'm not technically holding it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've really increased a lot of my value here.
So I sold all of my stock at ridiculously high prices, waited for it to die down, and then my cloned appendage bought them at a smaller rate.
That's what we call a value add.
God, the sad thing is this is all so true. It's all so true.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the real world is beyond parody. That's...
Well, because it seems that every time we record early, something crazy happens. And then the fact is that I forget to comment on it for like 2 weeks straight, which is Elizabeth.
Well, thing. I mean, we had a big there was a big thing that happened with the Leagues of Votan.
That was pretty funny. I'm sorry. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do believe that there has something to do with capitalism. And let's make this the most busted broke army of all time. And then as soon as, you know, we're done with the sale of the initial waves on it, we're going to go ahead and put the actual nerf on it. Like, that thing was prepped and ready to go.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, so here's my stance on it. Like, I don't think it's an over nerf. Like, I think that they're still going to be extremely strong. Like, just going with the changes that they made, like the changes that I saw, I still think they're going to be a really strong faction, like right out the gates. So I don't think it's like a normal, like, oh my God, we really fucked this up. We're, you know, we sold the army already. We're going to make them terrible now. It doesn't seem like that. It actually just seems like they fucked up their playtesting and were like, ah, shit. And they actually were like, well, we're going to try and fix it on the fly. Like, it actually seems like that.
No, I guarantee you we're going to make this army super great and busted. Everybody buys into it. We have this nerf ready to go.
But there wasn't enough. But they didn't have all the figures available. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I mean, I guess.
Like,
but...
don't get me wrong. If here's the thing. If that was the plan, if your tinfoil hat idea here was the plan, it was very poorly executed. If that's the case. So,
well, that's Games Workshop.
I don't know what I don't know what the law is, but it's like an Occam's razor pose law kind of thing. But it's never assume what malfeasance if incompetence is a viable factor?
That's Hanlon's razor.
Hanlon's razor. Yes. So I go by Hanlon's razor a lot.
Oh yeah.
Because yeah. I think because dealing with like a lot of companies and business owners and stuff, like seeing it on like the back end a lot, like Hanlon's razor, absolutely, like it's real. Trust me.
It's I think it's never a tribute to malice. What could be explained with stupidity?
Yes, or incompetence.
Yeah. Stupidity, incompetence.
Yes.
Relatively similar.
Absolutely. Like I said, being in the like the dark underbelly side of the industry, Hanlon's razor is a real thing. Like you should definitely think about it. That's why it always cracks me up whenever I see people like just coming up like because I see, you know, store owners and like various people like coming up with these like outrageous conspiracy theories of, you know, insert whatever current thing is happening, and I'm always just like, what do you think? Like they come up with this conspiracy theory that isn't even like profitable. It's like, so the idea is that you've come up with this like elaborate scheme that this company is performing to make less money. That's their masterstroke. Their masterstroke is not this scenario with Games Workshop, just like other ones that have popped up in the gaming industry. I'm like, so your thesis here is that this company came up with this elaborate ruse to bamboozle everyone with the final end goal of making themselves a whole lot less money. I see. I'd like to subscribe to your newsletter, sir. You're clearly a visionary.
Hey, man, they sold incredibly well.
Oh, they did. Yeah. No. I don't think that wasn't specifically referring to this scenario. Yeah,
I was going to say, like, they sold incredibly well and they were unbelievably good. And you can't tell me that there were many people who didn't buy them thinking these guys are incredibly good.
Oh, sure.
But of course, I'm with you in the fact that these people should have realized that they would be nerfed within 6 months, let alone 6 days.
Right, exactly. So if anyone, you know, no one should be unexpected. And honestly, if I was a tournament player of 40K, I would be very happy with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because seeing that they're willing to actually like take some steps to be like, hey, you know, we're not going to actually let an army that's absolutely fucking broken. Because I mean, everybody wants to play with strong. Like, you know, I think I've talked about this before, but like everyone wants to play with strong shit, and strong shit is good for your game. Like, you never and one of the unfortunate truths of game balance is that 100% of the time. If anyone here is listening, they're designing a game, let me tell you, from being in the industry for a very long time and seeing lots of different games rise and fall for various reasons, I can tell you this, 100% of the time, you are better off making something that is way too strong than way too weak. 100% of the time. That's always true across any game. The key is, if you make something that's way too fucking strong, you have to have a plan. You have to do something. Cause like Force of Will is like the best example of this. Force of Will, there was a ruler that came out that was so degenerately OP. There was no reason to play anything other than this one ruler. And like every player was like, this sucks. Like, you need to ban this ruler. It's way too fucking strong. Like, it's not fun. Everyone's playing it. Not only is everyone playing it because it's too strong, it's also boring because like it's OP and everyone is just playing the same thing and it's like, it sucks. Like, it's terrible. Like, you need to fix this. And they just let it rock for like over a year and it absolutely killed their game on 100%. So if you release something that's too strong and you do nothing, you will kill your game, even casually. Cause like I was saying before last time, like the majority of players aren't tournament players across the board for any game. They just aren't. This is not a thing. All tournament players are a minority of the players. They're just the loudest because they're the ones who are the most active online.
I was just thinking as you were going through all of that, I'm kind of thinking of what I like to call Heinlein's razor, or actually let's call it Clark's razor.
Okay.
Which is, any sufficiently advanced stupidity is indistinguishable from malice.
Ooh, I like that too.
Because that one is fun because you're like, man, Games Workshop has been so sufficiently advanced, and their release has been so advanced stupid that it's indistinguishable from actually trying to create a conspiracy to sell more figures.
That's funny. So obviously, yeah, you want to release something that's good because you want people to buy it. Like, duh, makes sense. The key is to not make it, you know, too strong. And you don't want shit to be too weak, because like too weak, like you get the same bad feels, arguably worse bad feels, when someone buys into the army and they suck. Like that's really bad when you're like, yeah, this army, it's not even that this army is too strong. It's just this army's actually just ass. It's like, cool, way to go. That's great. That's a real good feeling. So I mean, I would always rather you know, if you're designing anything, just err on the side of too strong and just be willing to fix it. That it's simple as that. And, right. And I think this is a good fix. I'm excited to see that they were actually willing to do something quickly. It's good. That's all. So yeah, Votann, we're squatting it up here, baby.
So let me ask you a question. Now that we're past that initial news.
Yes.
Let's go back, you know, two casts ago. And let me ask a question. Do you think that the queen's corpse is significantly rotted enough that if she was raised by a necromancer, she would look more zombie-ish than actually queenish?
No, I have to imagine she's riddled with so many preservatives. She just looks like Lenin at this point.
Must crush capitalism.
Yeah, that's right.
That's assuming that her body is still intact after the lizard children that were too lizard-like to actually go out in public and actually pretend to be human have not devoured her corpse.
Oh, I see. Well, I mean, are we sure that that's still in play?
Lizard people be lizarding.
You're right, but I mean, I thought with the climate shifting, they had to move to a deeper portion of underground layers.
I mean, it could very well be, but we did see that the queen was lowered into that cathedral to some sort of catacomb, if you will.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, I've been doing my own research, as everyone should. You know, you should be your own expert.
Always be your own expert.
Always be your own expert. And
oh, by the way, Steve, just so you know, one of our uploads on YouTube got flagged for COVID misinformation. Anyway, continue.
That's awesome. But anyway, so here's the thing with with the flat Earth, as everyone knows, the flat Earth that's actually flat.
Yeah.
I have determined the cause of, like, you know, so. This is the lizard people now. So here's what it is. I figured it out. So I was trying to figure out why so many people don't think that the Earth is flat. And I'm just like, I just don't get it. Like, why don't you all think the Earth is flat? And then I realized it's an elaborate ruse by the lizard people. And what they have is when NASA launches a shuttle. See, NASA is not in on it. NASA's innocent scientists trying to prove real facts for everyone. You know, they're a good. Honest agency. And here's the thing, when they're going to launch a shuttle, the lizard people, they knock the crew out, so the crew doesn't realize that they've been knocked unconscious, and then they get launched up, they feel like they're going up, and then they see Earth. But what they see is a hyperinflated balloon that makes Earth appear as if it was a sphere, because the idea of the controversy is what's keeping people on the back foot, allowing the lizard people to continue their regime unabated, because so many people are still arguing about the flatness of the Earth. See, that's the real. See, if you follow the money, that's the real crux of the issue here.
So what you're saying is that the Rand Corporation, in conjunction with the saucer people, under the supervision of the reverse vampires, are forcing our parents to go to bed early.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's in a fiendish plot to eliminate the meal of dinner.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
All right. people are so dumb. Anyway, I've been loving the memes from Ireland, by the way, about the queen dying. I'm kind of sad that it's all over, but, you know, give it like 5 years and we'll be able to make King Charles death jokes. So we'll be good there.
Well, yeah, I mean, plus we're on the Star Trek timeline track. The Irish reunification 2 years.
Irish unification in 2 years. And then they could have that episode with the Irish bombings that gets banned in the UK.
Yep. See, there you go.
Yeah. Was it really? Is it really 2020?
The Irish reunification of 2024. Yep.
Oh, God.
We are on track, baby.
One Ireland. One Ireland for everyone.
We are on track.
Oh, the further dissolution of the United Kingdom always makes me chuckle a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's some of our queen jokes. I'm sure we'll be able to come up with some of them later, but they're less effective when it's, you know, 4-6 weeks out from the queen's death.
That's true. Oh, man. Speaking of queen, and it made me think of music, and that made me think of biopics. And holy crap, have you seen trailers for the Weird Al one? It looks so good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's it will be good. I think UHF is an underrated gem. I don't like saying le underrated gem that often.
Oh, I love UHF.
I know it, but the thing is like I love looking at UHF in the moment in history in which it was released. It was released in 1989, and for some of our younger listeners who are not old fucks like us, the summer of 1989 is perhaps the single greatest summer for movie releases of all time. You will not find a better release summer than the summer of 1989, and that includes Batman, Lethal Weapon 2, Lethal Weapon 2,
Which is
Honey, I
better than
Shrunk
three.
the Kids, Basic Instinct. I can't think of it off the top of my head. Oh, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Damn.
It was a fucking phenomenal summer. Like every week there was a movie that was released that was just amazing.
Yeah, Jesus,
And
that's like banger after banger.
I know. And the only one that I think would come close would be the summer of 1999. But the only problem with the summer of 1999 is that there were a lot of sequels released in the summer of 1999.
No, we
But I
don't
mean,
like that.
and a lot of the summer stuff of 1999 were movies that I was more into. I mean, like I think 99, not necessarily the summer, but there was like The Matrix, The Mummy, Star Wars
Oh, yeah.
Episode One,
The Mummy's so good.
South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, Austin Powers 2, The Spy That Shagged Me.
Was there a Big Willy weekend that year? Had to be a Big Willy weekend that year.
I'm sure there was in 99. But
Yeah.
I think in 99 it may have been Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider. No, you don't want nada. None of this. Six gun in this, brother running this, Buffalo Soldier. Look, it's like I told you. Any damsel that's in distress will be out of that dress when she meets Jim West. Rough Rider, remember the name. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, like I can't tell you exactly what was a summer of nine. I know that Lake Placid did, which started the resurgence of Betty White as a veritable star,
As a sex pot.
as a sex pot. Yeah. Blair Witch Project, also 1999. I just watched that movie again.
Do you like Blair Witch Project?
I think Blair Witch Project has its moments. I think that it is a solid horror movie. It did something completely new in a genre that was super stale by 99. And you know it was super stale because
Because
Scream.
Blair Witch was successful.
Well, no, because Scream was super successful in, I think it was 96, 97. And Scream is a satire on horror movies, which pretty much dismantled the entire slasher genre.
Yeah,
So you couldn't
it was
do.
a meta movie. You couldn't do a slasher anymore after it because, like, what are you gonna do? Like,
Yeah, you can't. It already explained everything perfectly.
yep, it gave you. It was like, yep, this is gonna happen now. It like and like and it and it's not even wrong. Like, if you watch any like new slashers, have to be like completely alien to work out.
Yeah. So that's, so Blair Witch did something new, which kind of reinvigorated the genre of horror for a lot of things. And it's actually a truly scary movie for when it was released.
Fair enough.
Now, you could look back on it and go, this movie's not scary. It's about three idiot white people getting lost in the woods. But
I was just never a fan of the Blair Witch when it was new, like when it came out. It was never for me.
oh, that movie was I will stand by the genius of that movie.
I didn't jive with it, but I will say, I think that it opened up the door to the found footage genre, which has had some really good movies. Like I recently watched Incantation, which is a found footage movie, and holy shit, it's so good. And like those movies wouldn't exist without Blair Witch. So I would say that regardless of the fact that I don't think Blair Witch is a particularly good movie in itself, I will still absolutely recognize and respect that it did work for the genre.
Well,
Like it
you
did
could
some heavy lifting,
yeah,
so.
you could see like the through line from Blair Witch to Paranormal Activity, which I would argue is probably the most successful found footage
Yeah, for sure.
franchise out
Oh, for
there.
sure. For sure. No question.
Because me and my daughter actually watched Paranormal Activity, and the buildup in Paranormal Activity is done really well.
Yeah,
So
the
like
first Paranormal Activity is a good movie.
they did a pretty good ramp up of the intensity in that movie. I think it could have went a little bit faster, but that's always my problem with movies in general. I don't like slow burn movies.
Movies
that much.
Movies are too slow. I just watched. Speaking of slow burn movies, I just watched this one that had a bunch that had a really really positive critical review. Speak No Evil.
Oh yeah,
it's a Dutch movie. What a piece of shit! That movie was garbage. It was so bad. It was so bad. Like I was like. I don't know, dude. Like it was really shit. It was one of the worst horror movies I've ever seen. If not the worst horror movie I've ever seen. It was so bad. Like, you know, unbelievably bad.
Here's a controversial opinion for you on horror movies. I don't think many horror movies are that scary. Foreign horror movies are that scary. And here's the reason is because I think that horror is cultural. It's like comedy. It's mm-hmm. that the things that certain cultures find scary are not always the same that other cultures find scary, with a few exceptions.
I think Supernatural can I believe, so I agree with you on social horror, which is what this movie would fall under, like, you know, people.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of supernatural horror is pretty universal.
Yes, except like you get some weird ones, like you'll get a horror movie from, I don't know, like Indonesia, and they're like, oh, this is the scariest movie ever released in Indonesia. It's about our cultural monster, an umbrella that comes to life and will eat your head if it rains yellow rain. And you're like, that's not really scary. And every Indonesian you meet is like, no, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be terrified of an umbrella that's going to come to life and eat my brain.
Yeah, you'll watch like some Korean movie, and it's called Chuan Shui or something like that, and you're like, oh, this is supposedly the scariest thing ever, and it's a movie about fan death.
Korean horror is really good though. The Host is good, and Train to Busan is good.
Train to Busan is probably one of the best Korean horror movies I've ever seen. I don't think The Host was that scary.
The Host wasn't very scary, but it was good.
It was a very good movie, but I was like, this is not a horror movie. This is kind of a comedy.
It's like a monster comedy movie.
Yeah, it was very silly. Which is not bad. I just, you know, sometimes I want to watch something scary, you know. I was I've been on my horror kick lately, and because it's the spooky season now.
Yes.
For me, the spooky season starts like August 30th. But it gets technically earlier every year. I think it's August 1st might be like the when the spooky season officially starts for me. But nice. I've been trying to catch up on a lot of older horror that I have not watched in a long time or anything like that. And I started watching Salem's Lot, the old TV miniseries.
Ooh,
that movie is so bad.
Yeah, it's bad. A lot of those old Stephen Kings are actually just ass.
The majority of them are not. It's just that Salem's Lot is impressive because it was a TV movie, two TV movies. It was like two episode miniseries, mm-hmm. or maybe three episode miniseries. I don't remember, but it's like they put it all together for like one 3-hour movie, and it's like, oh, this doesn't work when you have to watch all 3 hours straight through.
Yeah. If you watched it in the actual like original format,
yeah,
it would work. But yeah,
I got that. I got hooked. I was like, because I was watching the 101 scariest horror moments of all time on Shudder, because everyone was saying like, oh, this is a really good thing to watch. And I was watching it, and I'm like, some of these are so terrible. Like I don't understand how some people. I shouldn't say some people, because it's the vast majority of horror fans convince themselves that such dumb shit is scary, right? Like I watch it and I enjoy it, but there are very few moments that I've been legit scared of in movies.
I can't remember a movie I've ever been actually like scared of.
Mulholland Drive.
I've never seen Mulholland Drive, so I should watch that. I've only seen the clip.
The Winky's Diner scene in Mulholland
Drive. Yeah, that I've seen that, which is definitely horrifying.
But the thing is like when you watch it in the context of the movie, that's the thing that people don't like. That's the hard thing that people don't understand, that you have to watch that scene in the context of the movie, because it's so out of place that it's
Isn't it just like nothing else in the movie is like that? It's just. Yes. A thing that happens, and it's like super, it makes it even more surreal, because like it's like, why is this happening in this movie?
And I think Mulholland Drive is a terrifying movie in general. It's just uncomfortable and weird and David Lynchian, you know, it's like, whatever, yeah. It's David Lynch.
Right.
Then you watch it and you're like, oh man, this is, I can't, you have a hard time watching it. Like maybe Gaspar Noé's Irreversible might be close to like the level of uncomfortability.
Irreversible is a pretty uncomfortable film to watch.
Yeah.
That is not, I would definitely not call that one a romp.
It is not a romp in the least.
Yeah, that movie is a very uncomfortable film to watch. That's one of those movies where it's just like, I can never, that's a weird movie because that movie is masterfully made. That is an excellent film in terms of like everything you like, what like the direction is incredible, the reaction it wants you to have is like, if you are a human being, you will very likely have the reactions that movie wants you to have. The presentation is perfect, but my God, the subject matter is just like, holy shit. And it gets, so the movie's in, so without spoiling anything to you on this film is like the most bleak possible like
scenario
you can imagine, and it plays out in reverse, so you get the plot backwards, and because it's playing out in reverse, it makes it worse as it goes on. You're like oh my God, I can't believe, and then it's just like, it's getting worse and it's getting worse and it's getting worse. It's so grim.
and it gets worse because the ending is happy.
yes the end of the film is a happy moment. It's fucking, yeah, it's fucked up, absolutely horrible. Like,
yeah,
it's a movie that, like, I think if you have the stomach for it, you should watch it, because I think it's a like I said, I believe it is a masterfully made movie, but my God.
I haven't seen his newest one, or at least the last newest one that I heard of, which was the one where it's a bunch of like theater people have a party, and this guy drugs the punch with like a bunch of psychedelics. And it's like, it turns into like this crazy nightmare movie. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm just not a big, as I was saying, it's French. It's kind of like the French have a different idea of what is scary than Americans, which is fine. I'm not saying anything against what the French find scary versus what Americans find scary. I just always find that it tends to be more uncomfortable than actual like creepy or scary.
Mm.
And that's not my jam.
I did really like High Tension.
Hot Tension.
Yeah, I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, I like that movie when I watched the first 5 minutes and I figured out the twist. And I was like, oh, now I just have to sit through this.
It's still entertaining, even if you figure out the twist.
I mean, it kind of is, yeah. I hate movies like that, where it's like, when you figure out the twist, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, depending on the twist. Like, it depends on what the twist is.
It's a twist.
It's a twist.
So speaking of spooky, I wanted to talk about a new game that I've been kind of getting into.
All right.
Haven't done anything super substantial with it yet. I've just kind of been putting together some figures for it. Silver Bayonet, which is a game that we've talked about before.
Yes. Yeah. The
Napoleonic horror game.
Yes. Napoleons and werewolves.
So in doing some research on it and looking into it, it's done by the same guy who does Frostgrave.
Right? Okay.
And Stargrave. So, you know, you already know it's got a decent pedigree, because Frostgrave's not a bad game. People really love Frostgrave.
Yeah, it's a good game.
I played a lot of it in its first edition. I shouldn't say I played a lot of it. I played a decent amount just to kind of get an idea and the feel for the game in the first edition. It did have its problems in the first edition. So I was like, I'd rather just go back and play Mordheim.
Right.
If I'm going to play this game, because this game's not so, but apparently it's gotten better and it's next editions and a lot of the supplemental material really improves on it, along with the supplements and Ghost Archipelago, which is Frostgrave in the jungle, which is nice. And Stargrave apparently is amazing. People say that game is fantastic. But for me, I'm looking at this one, which is more of a historical in context. It looks really, really good. It's D10 system, which I think all mini games should move to, because I think the percentages work much, much better.
Yeah, D10's nice.
I mean, and for the listeners at home, seriously, the difference between a D6 and a D10 game is insane. You have no idea how different the two feel if you've never played a D10 game. Because
the only one that's close would be like War Machine style, where you're rolling a very like two dice is the core, and then you like add some dice with like bonuses. That's not a D6 system though. A D6 system is one we're talking like where you're rolling many, many D6s, yeah. Like Warhammer, it's like, or Warhammer 40K.
Yeah. Any game where like a 4+ on a D6 is a hit.
Yes.
Like you kind of feel the difference between a 4+ and in a D6 game, because it's 4, 5, 6. In a D10, if you're doing that 5+, it's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's like it completely feels different because your rolls are all over the place. So it's a lot less swingy. It's a lot more towards the center. And I can't describe how different it feels. It feels much more, I don't want to say realistic, but it feels much more the way it's supposed to feel in combat. The game itself is interesting. I think I was a little disappointed in how there's not a ton of variation in between the warbands, right? So I was hoping that like, oh, so there's going to be a huge difference between the French and the British and the Russians and blah, 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 all the other stupid Napoleonic stuff. They're very similar. There's very few differences between the warbands. Like one of the main differences is Russians get a werebear. That's about it.
Hey, I mean, werebear, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that there's an entire section of the book when I was going through it that's dedicated to solo play.
I like that.
Yeah, and I know you're a big fan of that when it comes to mini games.
I'm a huge fan of solo play for mini games for multiple reasons. One, I like being able to play the game whenever I want, which is cool. And two, just for learning the fucking game, dude. It's so valuable to be able to play it because so many times you'll run into like common pain points for the game when you're playing by yourself. So then next time when you're actually playing people and they're about to fall into that pain point, you can be like, oh, it's this. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. And you just get to do things so much faster. Like, imagine how many games, like anyone listening now, imagine that first time you've all played a game where like maybe only one person's played it or no one's played it, how long it would take you to resolve all the various bullshit that comes up. If you were able to play that game by yourself, like for like a month before you had to play with anyone else, all that shit would go away. And it does go away. I've done it. Like I've done that. I've done the like, I'm playing this game by myself. Now I'm going to play with someone else. It literally does work that way. It's so nice.
I mean, I came across that playing Curse City the other day. We were trying to do one of the scenarios and we're like, how the fuck does this rule work? This doesn't make any sense. And it's like, we could not find it fucking anywhere in the rule books. And eventually I had to like go online to a YouTube fucking video to figure out how to play this one fucking scenario.
See, and if you were playing solo, you would have gotten that.
I mean, maybe.
Curse City is a solo play.
Yeah,
play that game by yourself.
I mean, you can play it solo play. You're absolutely correct. I just, you know, I enjoy the company of others. I enjoy the company of men, Steve.
That's fine. I'm not arguing that you should play it by yourself, but I'm saying like if you had been playing that game by yourself, it's likely that you would have encountered that issue, and then, you know, ahead of time is what I'm saying.
Oh yes, absolutely. So Silver Bayonet has some. It's pretty balanced. It feels very themey, I would say. And the minis are super fucking cheap because you just use Napoleonic figures.
Oh, yeah,
so you just go out and buy any box of Napoleonic figures. You get like 1,000 in a box for like $20. And you could just throw them out on the table and play right there. It's not a huge warband. You maybe have 8 figures. You could have fun stuff like occultists and priests and vampires and stuff like that. I actually have one of my occultists.
Can I have Cthulhu's?
You could run them as something. You could put a Cthulhu out there, like a cultist kind of thing.
Nice.
But the main thing is that like probably the half your warband should be like a specific nation's soldiers. So like you'll have like if you want to do British, you should have like 4 British figures in your army, and the other 4 could kind of be cultists or priests or vampires or whatever have you.
I see.
If that makes sense. Because there's a lot of combat in the game. And the interesting thing, too, is that you get characters and your character, you get to kind of customize, give them specific traits and specific weapons. But there's not a ton of specific weapons. Like you kind of give your guy anything that you want. It's not like you're like ever like hamstrung and saying like, oh, I really want this. I really want that. All of them are kind of shitty. So you're kind of like, it doesn't really matter what I give them.
I mean, that's cool.
It's not great. Yeah, that's the great thing. I'm actually doing something even nerdier. I'm doing, because of my Polish heritage, I'm doing the Duchy of Warsaw, which doesn't even have rules. I'm just running them as French.
Oh,
yeah. But I like them because they have
a duchy.
It's a duchy. You're going to pass that duchy on the left. But I like them because they have like big, tall hats that have squares on the top of them. So I'm good with that.
You and your hats.
Yeah, but it's I think it's a fun game to look into if you're looking for something to play for the spooky season, because there's a lot of monsters on the table that run independently of the players. Okay. So even though the British are fighting the French, there's also fucking zombies on the table.
Oh, I see. So it's like that's like The Walking Dead.
Yeah, very similar to The Walking Dead.
The Mantic Walking Dead minis game.
Mm-hmm. Very similar.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think that's a cool mechanic for any game where you have like basically an AI controlled party in the middle of things, like creating interference. I think that's cool.
Yeah, and I think that I like the idea of it as a 3-player game almost. Because sometimes you'll be playing a game and, you know, of course the AI moves the figures and everything, but it's nice to have, if you have like a third person who kind of can control the AI too.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you could focus on just your warband, your opponent could focus on their warband, and the third player, you know, like let's say that you were going to have a 4-person game night and that fourth person doesn't show up, the third person could easily play the enemies and do that throughout the game.
And fuck you up.
Yeah, there's zombies and vampires and werewolves and goblins, kobolds, because it's Napoleonic, so of course it'll be kobolds and all that fun stuff. I recommend it. I do, at least take a look through. The rule book's cheap. It's an Osprey book. It's not like you could get it online for like $20. And there's no like there's not 1,000 supplements to it like Frostgrave right now. Frostgrave, I think, has 19 supplements.
Damn.
I know, it's a lot.
Damn.
So, I mean, that's my Halloween pick for the upcoming spooky season.
Nice. I don't have a particular Halloween recommendation. I just know that there's a lot of really good Halloween-esque games I've seen on Kickstarter recently. I saw one called VHS, I think it's called, like VHS Horror or something like that. Ooh. But so it's pretty cool. It's like a board / RPG.
Okay.
And each VHS is essentially a movie. I've seen this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like one is like Friday the 13th. Like they don't call it Friday the 13th, but like it's like the camp killer.
I think they were previewing this at Adepticon.
Yeah. There was like, it's like the camp killer massacre, and everything looks like a VHS. So each scenario is boxed in a VHS holder. And when you pull it out, it's got minis, it's got a map, and you play out said scenario for, of the movies. They have one that's based on Alien. They have a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a Halloween, a Friday the 13th. There's also one called Final Girl, which I think we've talked about before, where you actually play as monsters, trying to, you're again playing out a horror movie scenario, horror slasher. So those would be some easy ones to pick up. And then there's one, I can't fucking remember the name of it, but this one is based on it's designed for internet play, and it's a Zoom call essentially, but the game has an overlay and it does specific things for each player. And the idea is that one of the players is an alien. So it's kind of got an Among Us vibe. But the game will show specific people things that other players can't see. So like on your screen, you'll see like, you'll be, I don't know, you're the engineer. So like all of the engineering problems will only show up on your screen. And when you die, your screen goes away. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to mention that Dune game, the War for Arrakis that we talked about last time for Kickstarter, actually made $1.3 million, just to point out, for Kickstarter.
Damn.
I know. Jesus Christ. I mean, not the biggest Kickstarter game of all time, but that was a crazy one. I always like my go-to game for fun for Halloween is always going to be Mysterium. I think Mysterium's probably the best Halloween game out there.
I'm a basic bitch. I'm a big fan of House on Haunted Hill, or Betrayal at House on Haunted Hill.
Betrayal at the House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
The only problem is that game, I feel that Mysterium works well with normies. Because it's just like, it's all about feeling and intuition as opposed to actually doing anything.
Yeah. You know, that the third edition actually, the brand or the newest, so third edition of Betrayal actually did fix that problem the most. They have a, they have a mechanic now for being able to swap the betrayer, which I think is a hugely important thing. Because every time I've run that game,
sorry about that.
It's all right. The recording.
I wasn't paying attention to the time.
I missed. I don't know where I cut off. But basically,
it's about swapping the when you were swapping the betrayer.
Oh yeah, so you can swap the betrayer to a more experienced player now, mechanically they have that set up, which is great. It's good. And it's just a lot of solid changes. There's actually a good reason to upgrade to the new edition. I recommend it. And that's one of the reasons it's, you know, one of my go-to Halloween games, cause it's spooky, it's fun. And now it's even easier for anyone to play.
While I was waiting for you to log on, I actually looked up feature films released in 1989, sorted by popularity, according to IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
So Batman is number 5. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is number 6. You know what number 1 is?
No idea.
The Karate Kid Part 3.
Ugh.
I know. It's like the worst one.
Why is that number 1? That's insane. That, like, over Batman? That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And also, why is Karate Kid Part 3 112 minutes long? That movie should be 90 minutes max.
That movie's shit.
Yes. And number 2 is Roadhouse.
Roadhouse.
Number 3, The Little Mermaid. Number 4, Dead Poets Society. And I think Dead Poets Society is number 4 because Dead Poets Society is one of those. Dead Poets Society is what I call a stupid person smart movie.
That's the Oh Captain, My Captain movie, yes. Right? Yeah, I've never seen
that movie. There are several movies out there that stupid people will say, that's my favorite movie, because it's a decent movie that makes you feel smart watching it. And so, like, that's an example of it. Shawshank Redemption is another example of it.
But in Shawshank Redemption, he climbs through poo. That's funny.
I really hated Shawshank Redemption because it is a stupid person smart movie. Until I was able to separate myself enough from those stupid people to actually sit down and watch it. I'm like, I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, he climbs through poo. It's funny.
Yeah, it's a Frank Darabont movie. You gotta love his movies. And number 7, When Harry Met Sally. 8, Back to the Future Part 2, Uncle Buck, Steel Magnolias, man. Lethal Weapon 2, The Abyss, Pet Cemetery, Field of Dreams, Ghostbusters 2, Weekend at Bernie's, Christmas Vacation, Do the Right Thing, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Parenthood, Teen Witch, Tango and Catch, Fletch Lives, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Say Anything, Major League. Like, these are all amazing movies. And number 28, Steve, Society.
Shunt. Shunt. Shunt.
Shunt. Shunt.
It's shunting time.
God, I love that movie so much.
Yeah, the movie's great.
I still say it's one of the greatest Lovecraft movies that people don't acknowledge as a Lovecraft movie.
Oh, no, it's absolutely. I completely agree with that.
Yes. And then they were shouting, shunt.
Shunt, shunt, shunt.
Yeah, the some other things I want to talk about, at least news-wise, because, you know, we didn't even basically get to news to the second half of this podcast. I really do, like... It's not really news, but I don't understand what Games Workshop's endgame is with how they're doing Underworlds nowadays. So they're doing a box set once a year now.
Oh, man, those skeletons look so fucking cool.
They all the models are always really great. But I don't understand anybody who at this point is still shelling out regularly for all of the warbands plus the boxes.
Bro, I don't know. You got me. Like, if they were better in Age of Sigmar, I could say, like, maybe people are buying them to double dip, but, like, they're garbage in Age of Sigmar. Like, they're the thing that's annoying about that is that they could fix them very rapidly. Like, it wouldn't even be hard, because it's not even necessarily about them being bad, which they are. They're bad war scrolls. Like, they're a waste of points. So that's the first thing that's an issue. Like, all of them are underpowered and overpointed. So that's the first issue. The second issue is that they're extremely annoying to use, because they convert the models essentially one-to-one for Age of Sigmar. So that means you have a unit, like, as a warband, it's like, okay, who cares? You know, this guy's got a grand hammer, this guy's got a sword and shield, and this guy's got a halberd, and this guy has a crossbow, right? As a warband in Underworlds, sure, that's fine. That's no thing. But like continuously like swapping all of your attack profiles for an Age of Sigmar unit is annoying as fuck. Because that means that like you've essentially got, oh, it's got six different guys in there. That means you've essentially bought one war scroll. You have to remember six war scrolls worth of rules for.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And on top of that, you pay extra points and take a shitty unit for the privilege. it's not good.
Like I like the idea of Workshop releasing more boxed games. I think that the buying a box game and just playing the box game and maybe not having to worry about expansions too much is fine.
I agree with that.
If someone found Gnarlwood, I think is what it's called, in a Barnes and Noble and was like, oh, this game looks interesting, and they played it, I think that they would get a kick out of it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it would be a fine and fun game.
But here's they're still very, very expensive for a box game like it is. I mean, I think it's like $80 now for a two-player starter for that game.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. Especially if you were trying to get people into it. If it's a starter, starters should always be cheap. Like, yeah. You should never, your starter should never be more than, like, I say $60 for something like that. I mean, if you're doing, like, Age of Sigmar or 40K or whatever.
That's different because those starters also come with a lot more models.
Yeah. And they come with a lot more models, and it's more of that's an introduction into a much larger game. You can't play that out of the box and really get what the thing is supposed to be.
You can, but it doesn't really work.
Yeah. But I'm saying you're not getting like what it is supposed to be, which is it's supposed to be a like usually the armies are much bigger in order to get anything out of them, you know, blah, 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 blah. But games like Underworld should be very self-contained. And it just feels like it's way too bloated of a game right now. I'm not doing Underworlds anymore. I stopped two boxes ago. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Steam one. I think the Steam one is more than enough for me. I don't plan on doing the minis ones. And like I said, I mean, I would buy a lot more of the Warbands probably if they weren't so bad in the game. Like in Age of Sigmar.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember what's the last box set that I bought, but I think it was the fourth season. I bought all the Warbands for fourth season, and then I stopped. And the last box set that I bought I bought those Witch Hunters just because I thought they were really cool looking.
Yeah. Those guys are sweet looking.
Yeah. I was like, okay, if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to buy the box set for the Witch Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Also, by the way, when you go to gamesworkshop.com, do they always default you to some weird ass country?
Yes.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I always get defaulted to like Romania.
I never get the same one. It's not consistent.
It's not consistent.
I've been defaulted to Australia. I've been defaulted to Japan. I've been defaulted to some country that I've never heard of. Yeah, that's absolutely
some country that I never heard of.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really weird name. I was like, what the fucking country is this?
Is it España?
No, it's one of those things like, you know, like usually like I've heard of a lot of like, you know, small, you know, countries, but like this one was just like, I was like, is this made up? Like, is this country real?
Are we going to Tuvalu? Is that where everything is going to? Tuvalu? Yes.
Tuvalu.
Tuvalu. Is that what this is happening?
Yes.
Yes, but because I was, I also think that maybe they're gonna release some Warhammer Quest rules for them too, which would be nice.
Yeah. Oh, you know what though? Actually, I forgot to say something important.
What's that?
The Warbands are all quite good in Warcry.
They are. They're really fun to play in Warcry.
Yes. So the war. So if you really like the Warbands and you don't want to fuck with Shadespire. And you lament that they're poopy butts in Age of Sigmar, you can play them in Warcry, and they're quite good in Warcry.
I am officially 100% out of Age of Sigmar at this point.
Oh, yeah?
All of my stuff has been transferred to the Games Plus auction.
My goodness.
All of my books, and including my Stormcast Eternal Army. I might not sell it, though, because I put a really high price on it. It's a very, very, very nicely painted army.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not, I put it for $400, right?
Okay.
That's a little high for the auction. No one really likes to see any prices that high, but it's over 100 figures and they're all fully painted with custom bases. And, you know, I'm not a bad painter. So I'm just pointing that out there that I'm done with them. They take up too much space. I don't like armies that are on all 40 mils. That bothers me. Especially when you have over 100 figures on 40 mil bases.
It bothers me.
It does. It bothers me quite a bit because I'm like, it's too big. It's too big. Yeah. So, and all the army books that I did have, with the exception of, I kept all of the first edition, the God, like those four campaign books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I kept those because those are really cool. Hard to find.
Yeah, like the Quest for Galmaraz and stuff.
Yes, yeah, I kept the original cool. rule book, and I kept the original four soft covers that were like, here's how you play with Empire figures. Here's how you play with Dwarf figures.
Oh, the Grand Alliance ones.
The Grand Alliance books. I kept those just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah. But so that's all I'm keeping out of that range. I can't. I think my problem with Age of Sigmar as of late is it's just too fast. Like if I want to play with my Stormcast army, if I had continued to keep playing with it, I already had three battle tomes. I think I would have to buy two more battle tomes in order to, or if I had kept up with it, I would have bought two more battle tomes and I maybe would have played like three games since the start of Age of Sigmar with that army. It's too fast.
Well, Stormcast are definitely an army that has like your army gets updated a lot if you're playing Stormcast.
I know.
They have the most books by a fucking massive mark. Like it's not even close, like how comparatively most, and that's mostly due to first edition, but they definitely slowed down a lot after that. But man, first edition there were so many fucking Stormcast books.
Yeah, I think that with Age of Sigmar, I'm gonna stick to like Warcry and Quest right now. That's what I'm just gonna hold off and just do that. I kind of have been thinking like I have to, for my Marie Kondo style of does this bring me joy, I'm just gonna do, for fantasy, it's gonna be Warhammer Fantasy. It's gonna be the old square baser. I don't know which edition, but it doesn't matter because it's just those armies are kind of interchangeable. If you have enough stuff, if like you have an eighth edition army, you could play all the way down to fifth. How about that?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably true.
And for sci-fi games, I'm going to play my 30K. I enjoy playing that and building for that. And then historicals, I'm still kind of out on. I don't think I have any big historical game that I'm going to keep playing, but I might have like one or two things from a couple different games, but I'm not like going crazy with it. I've really enjoyed, there's a lot of historical stuff out there done by a couple companies that just do some really nice stuff on a smaller scale.
Yeah. I'm very cool with my Age of Sigmar stuff. I'm good with that. And I have my Battletech, and like that I have everything that I'll ever need for Battletech. So that's also finished. And then other than that, I mean, the only thing I'm waiting for would be ninth. We'll see what ninth brings.
Yeah.
And then
the old world. It's not ninth edition, Steve.
Yes, right. Old world.
It's
and
like
then
how it's like how Rocky Balboa is not technically Rocky Six. It's Rocky
right,
Balboa.
It's Rocky Balboa. Yeah, no, you're right. And then and I'll look into that material you mentioned that was supposedly quite durable for 3D
printing. Yeah. It's what is it? What did I say it's called? It's like it's irreversible. No, it's So you add this movie that's about rape into your resin, and that'll.
I see.
I see. Oh, this is terrible. Oh God, why am I watching this? Yeah, I think it's called a Tenacious. That's what it was. I had to say.
Tenacious. Okay.
Yeah, supposedly it helps out with that. It's Soraya Tech. I'm not a huge fan of Soraya Tech, which is their resins, because I think I was using it wrong to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm used to using a type of resin that will harden in 20 minutes. I feel like the Soraya Tech, when I was doing it, like my normal hardening techniques, it wasn't hardening properly.
Okay.
But then I like overbaked it with the UV light. And I think it actually works much better when you go a little bit longer with that one. supposedly that's the best resin, so who knows. But
yeah, so I'll take a look at that, and if that works out for me, then I'll do my old world stuff with that, and then also Warmaster.
I haven't decided what I'm going to do with my Warmaster yet.
Because I'm really only interested in fantasy gaming. I don't have any interest in doing sci-fi stuff. It's not for me. I've done 40K armies and I've played 40K, and it's just not for me. I'll just do different fantasy games. And I really like Age of Sigmar. I think the game is sweet. I like the models. I like the armies. I think they're all cool. I'm good.
So I'm going to take a moment out to talk about since you broached the subject of 3D printing, I wanted to talk about a couple recent Patreons that I've looked into, and I've been like, oh shit, these are some really cool fucking Patreons for 3D printing. Of course I'm always going to throw it out to Titan Forge first. There, I make fun, and I not make fun. I've touted them for many years, and they've recently did a release for Dark Elves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I think that they listened to us, because they did 3 units for this release, and they're amazing looking and very diverse, and it's multiple figures for one unit style. Yes. As opposed to like 3, which was what they normally do. And boys, if you're listening to me right now and you did that because of me, thank you so much, because those are so sick. They have a black dragon in that Patreon for last month, August, that is so unbelievably cool.
Yeah, they look fucking awesome. I still really want to do a pirate ogres. Yeah, I still really want to do a pirate ogre army. That's one of those things where I'm just like, man, I really want to fucking do that.
And they did what's it called? Who are the underwater elves? What are they called?
The Deepkin.
Deepkin. They did like a Deepkin army that looks fucking fantastic.
Sweet.
Yeah. With they actually look like they belong underwater, as opposed to just the elves that just look like elves. Like, these look like actual sea creatures.
Oh, the Deepkin don't look like elves. They look weird.
I think they look like elves.
They don't have faces. How do you think they look like elves?
Trust me, you look at what they did in July, which is the Abyssal Merfolks, and you're gonna be like, oh shit, that's how they should look.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I'm not saying that they won't look better. I'm just saying that like the Deepkin don't look like elves. They don't have fucking faces. They look weird.
Yeah. You know what? You are relatively right on that one. So the other one that I really liked was, let me see if I can find it. Here it is. So it's the worst named Patreon of all time, which is just called STL Miniatures. That's all it's called.
All right.
Because STL is the type of file.
Yes, yes, yes.
All that. But they've done stuff recently that I've just been like, these are fantastic little sets. They do like, they kind of do it very traditional. Like, we're going to release 10 figures and a little piece of terrain, or a bunch of little terrain pieces and one or two figures. But everything that they've done has been so cool looking that I've been floored by it. I've used a couple of their pieces lately. I think I did some of the monks that they did, because I thought that the monks that they did looked great. They also do stuff like, they'll do like, here's some Kenku, here's some, you know, elves, here's some centaurs, okay, Here's vampires, sort of thing. So if I think it's really great if you do RPG heavy minis and you're looking for some stuff for like a scenario, they might be someone that you might want to look into, because they could provide a lot of inspiration for a specific session or a specific, you know, thing going through. Like, oh, you know, here's some vampire hunters. They, you know, they come across this coach, they got vampire hunters in them, here's a couple models, blah, blah, blah.
Mantic actually just announced and showed off something that I thought was really cool, that's kind of on this subject, or they're doing terrain crate like DM kits.
Yeah,
and like they're really cool. So like it's a little box, looks kind of like a little book, and it has combat maps for every encounter in the module. It has a complete module with all the encounters, what it should be, where they're fighting, and then terrain, like printed plastic terrain, and it has how to lay it out for the encounters. So, like, example, if there is a fight at a tavern, you'll get a tavern map, and there'll be tables and chairs and like the bar and stuff, and it shows you like, this is where to put the tables, this is where to put the bar. It looks awesome. It looks really cool. They're inexpensive. They seem like an ideal, like, if you're a fifth edition minis user, like, you there, it seems like a no-brainer to buy them.
Yeah, there's a couple that are like that. I think Monthly Mini Encounters does something similar like that. Mm-hmm. They'll send you a box with, you know, 5 to 10 minis or whatever on there, and then you can get a bunch of shit in there.
Right. Well, and obviously this one's extra nice because it's Mantic, so obviously there's an absolute, you know, fuck ton of figures in your box.
Yeah. And then Epic Encounters does that.
Yes. Yeah. Epic Encounters has a flat map. Epic Encounters has monsters.
Yeah, they do the monster stuff. Yeah.
Yes, this is specifically like it's the terrain in the encounter. So like there, you know, it's chairs, tables, that kind of stuff. It's very cool. I was very impressed by it.
I mean, one would say that in 2022 we are living in the golden age of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, as much as we might love what was going on with second edition, nothing compares to the quality and level of releases that are being released for Dungeons and Dragons or RPGs in general at this point.
Yeah, no, it's not close.
The only thing that I could wish for was that there was a game that was somewhat close to Dungeons and Dragons in popularity. Maybe not like as close, but just like a good solid number two. Because I don't think that exists right now.
No. It does not. There really isn't. Like I'd say there's a bunch of other games that are kind of like in that like space, but I'd say two is kind of a swimming pool.
Yeah, I mean, no, you're right. It's a vast mix of things, and that's why I think Dungeons and Dragons is as popular as it is. Is because, hey, I want to play an RPG. You want to play this? I have all the books for this. What about Dungeons and Dragons? You got the books for Dungeons and Dragons? Yeah. Once again, everybody has the books for Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge, the games that I'm a big supporter of right now, obviously I love Morkborg. Morkyburg.
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 A buddy of mine was telling me that one of his brewer friends at, I'd have to look up what the brewery is doing a collaboration beer with Morkborg.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Cyborg. And I just watched Cyberpunk Edgerunners. So, like, I'm like, oh, fuck, man. I got to run a Cyborg game. Because Edgerunners was amazing. So, like, I'm like, shit.
Yeah, it's Cognition Brewery in Upper Michigan is doing a collab with Morkborg.
Cool. That's sweet.
Yeah. Thanks, Mick, for that. Thanks, Mick, for that breaking news. I mean, it's not breaking because you told me that, like, I want to say last week, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Well, you're breaking it. You're breaking it now. So
I'm breaking it now. I don't know if I'm supposed to be breaking that. I'm sorry if I'm not. I won't cut it because that would involve me going back. But we only have like 30 people that listen to this podcast, so it's going to make big news.
It's all good. And then D20 is my other big one that I I'm a big fan of. I like all the various 2d20s that I've played so far. I've just recently got a few more of the Conan books. Really like the Conan stuff.
I know you love that Conan stuff, and you know Tim, who I play games with, is a big Conan fan. You should see at some point his Conan miniatures collection.
Oh yeah,
it's so brutally heartbreaking how good that guy paints and how fast he paints. And you know, Tim.
I do. I've seen the halfling that he painted overnight that won a Slayer sword. I've seen it.
No, he wants to do scenario based games around Conan, and we're all like, just let's do it. And he's like, well, I'll wait till I have everything finished. And it's just his collection is so massive at this point. And it's not like the Conan stuff from that Conan Minis board game that was released, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is like all metal stuff that he has collected from different sources.
Oh, sure.
You know, like quality stuff. And you're just like,
just old, cool metal stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Conan is pretty dope. Yeah. I love Conan.
All right. And, you know, let me ask, have you gotten any further with Rings of Power?
That's my project for this weekend. I'm going to watch all of the Rings of Power up to this point.
Yeah. Last night's episode. Well, yesterday's episode, I watched it last night, is really good. Like,
yeah, I'm excited.
And that this is also the episode from the September 30th, not October 6th, 7th.
Yeah, I'll be smashing through everything today. That's my plan.
Yeah,
I've had my work's been very crazy, and I've been having a lot of doctor visits recently. So I've got to I've been busy with things.
Busy with things. I was actually, and I also wanted to say that I visited your family restaurant this week.
My family restaurant?
Your family restaurant. Greek Islands.
Ah, the Greek Islands, eh?
Yes. I figured that was probably pretty big in your house.
Usually we'd go to restaurants that were not specifically like said they were Greek, but let me tell you, the amount of breakfast restaurants in the local area that are owned by Greek families.
Oh yeah, they're all Greek. Yeah.
they're all Greek.
yeah, that's true. I was sitting in there, and you know, Greek Islands is a really good restaurant.
Yeah, they're good. They're tasty.
I just laughed at it because I'm like, this place is so Greek.
That's good. Yeah, no, it was great because it would be like it was really funny, like, so like the very first time we went to one of these places, the guy sitting us, you know, because we're brand new, and he's like, he sees our name, and he's like, oh, he's like, George, and he's like, blah 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 blah, and he starts speaking in Greek, and I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck you're saying, bro. And he's like, ah, you don't speak Greek. And I was like, yeah, I don't speak Greek, I'm sorry. Yeah. And he's like, but they still gave us extra food, which is sweet.
Which is sweet.
Yeah.
Who does, by the way, I didn't know if, because I was talking about this with my wife, she didn't know this, but how Saganaki is a Chicago thing.
Yeah.
Not many people know that. And if you're an overseas listener, maybe in Greece, we have a special thing in Chicago that might not be known outside of Chicago, but it's basically just flaming cheese.
Yeah, it's from Greektown.
Yeah, it's a Greektown thing. It's like basically you get a block of cheese that's covered in, I want to say, sherry.
Yeah, it's alcohol.
Yeah. And then they just light it on fire, and then they pour something over it. I don't know what it specifically is. And then you squeeze a bunch of lemon on it, and then you just eat the melty flaming cheese.
And it's so fucking good.
It's so fucking good. But it's such a Chicago thing to, like, what are you guys eating? Cheese that's melted. So you're just eating melted cheese. Yeah, it's on a plate. We're just all digging into the eating.
We're all eating this cheese that we just set on fire.
We just set on fire. Exactly.
Speaking of Chicago, I've been I watched all of up to season 5, because season 6 isn't on Netflix, but I watched all of Better Call Saul.
Oh yeah.
And dude, the Chicago episodes are great. Like, I did not know that he was a Chicago character.
I thought you were going to say the Bear. You guys watching the Bear?
The Bear?
You,
no.
Do you know what it's like, Steve, living in working in the city of Chicago?
What the fuck is the Bear? The sandwich?
Okay. So when you work with a bunch of normies and they're like, and you can't say like, are you watching the fucking Rings of Power? And I want to geek out about, you know, Elendil and Isildur and all this shit. Like, they're always just like, have you been watching The Bear? The Bear is a show on Hulu that's all about Chicago restaurants. Like, this guy comes and he like inherits his family's beef stand.
Okay.
And it's a serious drama. And people are like, it's so intense. Have you watched The Bear? Oh my God. It's like working in a restaurant. I don't know why he sounds like they're from Long Island. But...
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like a Chicago accent.
But that's the thing. It's like, it's always, this sounds so bad, but it's usually middle-aged to older women. And they talk about The Bear. Are you talking about The Bear? And it's just like always that's my older middle-aged woman.
Once you reach a certain age, if you're a Chicago local, once you reach a certain age, you get really into the fact that you're a Chicago local.
Sometimes. I mean, I've always been that I'm really into a Chicago local. I mean, I'm not a local anymore, but I was born into Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I was a Chicago local. I wouldn't consider myself a Chicago local now, but I mean, I spent like the first half of my life in Chicago. I lived on fucking Armitage. Like, yeah.
I still work in the city, so I give myself a pass. I don't care. Whatever. I was born in fucking Chicago, born and raised more than most of these assholes.
Yeah, I was also born and raised in Chicago. Yes.
The thing that And my father still lives there, God bless him. But they always talk about like shows like Chicago Fire. You watching Chicago Fire? Did you see what happened on Chicago Fire? So my joke is always that they should come up with a TV show called Chicago Office, which is just a bunch of people sitting around talking about the other Chicago shows that they watched last night.
Ooh, that's good.
That's actually more Chicago than Chicago Fire.
That's good. And then of course in the background you have to have 773 Luna. You gotta but have that.
The thing that drives me nuts though about the Bear is like everyone's like, it's a love letter to Chicago. Like, no, it's fucking not. Like, you wanna know the thing that's the truest thing about the Bear is that owners of restaurants are assholes.
Yes.
Every restaurant owner you'll ever deal with is a complete and utter asshole. Working in a restaurant sucks, but it's not any more Chicago than any other restaurant anywhere on the planet. Like, it's not, there's nothing unique about the Bear to Chicago, except for occasionally they'll make a Jardiniere reference. And every time I hear someone talk about Jardiniere now, they say like, oh, can I get some Jardiniere on that beef? I'll be like, oh, just like on the Bear. It's like you're just in Chicago.
Yeah, for me, like, I don't know. Like, what is a Chicago place to me? It's never any place that like, it's not that like, it's not necessarily people are like, oh, this, you know, it's people, places that people never heard of. But it's always like, for me, what a Chicago restaurant to me is there's a specific level of like sleaze.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be in the city proper. Cause like, I mean, I think one of the most iconic and ubiquitous Chicago restaurants is definitely not in Chicago. And that's Gene and Jude's.
Yeah.
I mean, Gene and Jude's is like an amazing hot dog place, and like there's just the level of sleaze there that like,
I mean, yeah,
it's, hey, you gotta have it.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you. I also think that Chicago proper goes all the way out to probably, I don't know, I'd say 355.
Okay. Yeah,
because like Chicago just wasn't able to absorb the other towns that a lot of other cities like LA or, you know, Atlanta or Houston are able to absorb.
Right. Yeah.
For some odd reason, it just stopped at the city limits back in fucking then, 1870, whatever, and that's it.
Right. And then the other things to me that are super Chicago are like Seven Treasures in Chinatown.
Oh, Seven Treasures.
So fucking good. Yeah. Margie's.
But once again, I don't believe that there's anything uniquely Chicago about a Chicago restaurant experience.
No, there in many ways. I don't think there's anything uniquely anything but anywhere like that. That's not a thing.
Yeah, restaurants
are the same.
Well, I mean, like in New York, they have like you could go to a pizzeria and you get a slice. You can't really do that in Chicago. You can. There's certain places you can, but it's not like in New York. It's every block. There's a place where you get a slice.
You can get a slice anywhere in the suburbs. It's actually a lot harder to do that in Chicago proper.
In Chicago proper.
Yeah.
It used to be a little different when you had like hot dog joints all over the place.
Yeah, say Chicago was always
like
you
don't have that anymore.
Chicago was always like a sandwich street food. So like hot dogs,
Chicago isn't allowed street food because there's an ordinance in place that says you can't have a restaurant and serve food without running water.
Well, yeah, not anymore. But before like there was.
Well, no, that was actually true all the way up until recently. They changed it so that we could have food trucks.
Because there was always the hot dog carts.
There was never hot dog carts in Chicago. There was never.
There was definitely.
Person selling food out of a cart was doing it illegally.
Oh, all right. Well, then there you go. So they were there.
So the tamale guy, he would get shut down all the time because he didn't have running water. You're not technically allowed to sell food without running water in the city of Chicago.
But there you go. So renegado food operators are a staple of Chicago culture. Because as you're saying that, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I used to buy stuff from carts all the time in Chicago. Like, oh, it was all illegal. Cool.
Like the Paleta man. Who you
yes.
See
oh, I love the Paleta man.
I don't like Paletas. I think they just taste like ice water. They just taste like flavor ice.
I really like banana.
A banana.
It's so good.
Yeah. But just like the Bear.
Just like the Bear. They got the banana in the Bear.
They got the banana paleta. Like that's what it would be like, though. This guy with this fake Chicago accent. That my Chicago accent sounds more realistic than his. And I mean by my fake Chicago accent, not my real Chicago accent. But you know, my Chicago accent where I'm talking like this, they're like making a fake accent, like, oh, we're gonna go down to the empty bottle and get some Get a Chicago handshake. It's like
I can't believe I got to get some old style before I go get a roast beef.
The only piece of media, there's two pieces of media that personify Chicago, and that's Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Both are love letters to Chicago from two very different perspectives.
Yes.
But
I hate Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis. But that's the thing, is that neither of the movies do any sort of like Chicago name dropping, which is the biggest sin of them all.
Right. You just exist in the city.
You exist in the city. You never say, I'm going to go get an old style over at this corner restaurant.
Yeah. I got to go pick up an old style over by over at Johnny's Beef.
Yeah, exactly. So just keep that in mind when you're watching Chicago stuff. All right, we got to end the podcast soon.
All right.
So go to the Game Classy Facebook page, because Facebook is fucking terrible. It's the best way you can get in contact with us as a duo. You can like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes, and like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. It's the best way you can help out the podcast. I did look. There was one that was done recently. I didn't bring it up before we ended the podcast, so it's a positive review. It's from one of our longtime listeners. So.
Yay! Positive reviews.
Positive reviews. And also you get it on the YouTube before they start getting taken down for our COVID misinformation. That was funny. I saved the email on that one.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's got to be great. I really want to know what it was.
It was episode 250, which was like 12 episodes ago. So that was a while ago.
All right.
Yeah, it just took that long for anybody to actually listen to that episode. And
I like it. Like, I don't know.
COVID misinformation.
Were we talking about the fact that COVID is a 5G laser program?
Probably. I
mean, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Coming out of the flat Earth.
Never, it never assigned to malice, which you can ascribe to stupidity. That's just basically what it is. Actually, it was probably someone from like a Renegade podcast, where that talks about, like, you know, it's their live play of Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. That they're just like, we can't be competing against these people. Misinformation. Now they'll have to listen to us live stream.
We will not.
Oh my god, I was watching a YouTube video for these guys called Guerrilla Games. I wanted to jump through my computer monitor and
the video. The video game place.
They do tabletop games. I don't know if they do video games.
Oh, okay. It's a different thing then.
It's a YouTube channel, and they show like playthroughs of games. But the guy playing it is like holding the camera in one hand as he's playing.
Ooh.
It's like I'm watching a goddamn Bourne movie.
That's awful.
I'm just like, put the fucking camera on a mount and
get a tripod. They're not expensive.
Or get someone to film for you. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
That's unacceptable.
I am over 40 years old. I don't have to put up with
this. I'm 40 or 50 years old. I don't have time for this.
I don't have time for this nonsense. You can get in contact with me through Instagram. I'm at Game Classy Joe. You can follow Steve on Twitter at @command_throw.
Yes.
So, Steve, until next time.
Wein sich die Weilwurz der Silvanus rühren. Müssen die Fender der natürlichen Ordnung auf der Hut sein. Die erwachten Geister, deisen uralten Heinenhausen werden durch Eindringlingen in her Reich zu Werkbatem Zorn angestalket.
Just like on the beer.
Just like on the beer.
Later.
Later.
Game Classy.